And welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Benjamin Franklin. Thank you for listening.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Are you all right?
I am, yeah. Why?
I spent the whole week cursing you.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
I found this book.
You found the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah.
I've had 1 week to read it.
Yeah, well, it turns out it's actually like on the syllabus if you're American.
We're not American.
And it's like, therefore, homework.
Oh, I felt it was homework this week.
I have to say, I love all the information in this book, but reading it was quite hard because it was written in 1770 or something.
Yeah.
It's a lot of old English and a lot of spelling's different, isn't it?
Yeah. But what I like about that is that he uses the word thither a lot.
There's some brilliant words. Yeah. Brilliant words.
I've been thinking about introducing thither into my daily lexicon.
Go on, use it in a sentence.
After this podcast, I shall go thither to a Budgeons to buy some crisps.
That's good.
So it's been a tough week because not only have I had to read this book, thanks to you, it's 300 years ago. It's on a different continent. We're not taught about American history in our schools. I basically have no previous knowledge of this man, of this era, of this whole world. So I think I'm about to come across as a colossal ignoramus.
Yes, I agree. So am I. And I have to say, yeah, we only have a week and we both have other jobs. Yeah. It's very hard to read this and then read through it again to make notes and then try and work out what the bloody hell's going on. Like, what war? What war with who? Because he misses a lot out.
Yeah.
It says, oh, sorry. He goes, oh, I dropped this for a while and a lot of my notes were lost when the war happened. What war? And then he just goes on and doesn't say what happened.
Yeah.
We don't have time to totally buff up on all of American history. Apologies. Massive apologies. I have got a general better knowledge of America in relation to Britain, amazingly, because it's such early days of settlement of America from us Western types that it's actually called a colony.
Yeah.
It's like a British colony.
I know.
Which obviously to us, it's weird.
It's so weird. And when I think about the English colonial past, I never consider that America is part of that.
I know, because it's its own place now, obviously.
Yeah,
well,
they rule us now in many respects. Yeah,
that's so true.
Anyway, so I ask you every week, what did you know about Benjamin Franklin before you read this book?
All right, here's a big embarrassing admission. Read the whole book going, when's he going to become president?
Oh, my God.
It was well.
I thought he was the president of America. How weird.
Because he's the founding father, right? So you assume a founding father is somebody who's like, I thought maybe that he was the first president and set down all the rules. Oh, I'm really sorry how ignorant we are. But he's got the $100 note, so why isn't he president? I tell you
what. Oh, that's why we think he is. Because
he's on the $100 note.
It's all about the Benjamins.
The Benjamins, I know. But I guess you don't put presidents on the notes. We don't. We put our queen and she's not voted for.
Well, Jane Austen's on our money.
Exactly.
Was she the Queen of England?
Exactly.
Yeah,
well, maybe some people read her book thinking, when's she going to become queen? Or prime minister or something.
Queen Jane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe nobody's as daft as us.
No, but the queen is on the note. She's on the front.
Yeah, so you assume that because America doesn't have royalty, that he must be president because that's the next most important person.
At the time of Benjamin Franklin, they did have royalty.
Well, they had British royalty.
King George III.
Oh, yes.
The mad one.
Okay, so we've massively outed ourselves as total ignorant people.
Damn it.
We're less ignorant now. And that's the point of reading books.
Are we?
Well, we know.
Oh, this is a Benjamin Franklin thing. He wanted to expand everyone's knowledge by making books freely available. He's done that to us.
He has.
Right now. Benjamin Franklin.
Born 1706.
It's a long time ago.
Yeah, and he lived till he was 84. That's a good long age for those times.
Yeah.
Is this the oldest person we've done so far?
The oldest or the one that was
the
furthest,
one furthest
to go?
Back. Yeah.
When was Barnum? 1800,
yeah,
right?
I think so, yeah. We should know that.
Hang on, no, Zsa Zsa Gabor.
But he said his grandfather was born in 1598.
Wow.
So I'm like, bloody hell, that's practically medieval times.
Yeah.
He goes way back.
He does go way back. There was quite a modest family, wasn't it, considering what he achieved in his life?
Yeah.
He had quite humble beginnings.
Definitely. And straight away I was amazed that this legend of America is basically British. The Franklins trace back 300 years to Northamptonshire. And Franklins was an order of people rather than a name. So it's like if you were squires or knights, you were Franklins. And I looked it up and it's mentioned in Chaucer and all this stuff. That's, you know, it really is kind of medieval, isn't it? Because 300 years before 1790, it's 1490.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's a long time
ago. I doubt people even had names before that.
Well, they didn't.
Well, Jesus, we had a name.
He didn't have a surname.
Didn't, did he?
No.
Peter, Paul, John, did they? Any of them have surnames?
No. They were just disciples.
They didn't have surnames.
They were mononyms, like Madonna and Prince.
Oh, yeah.
So Franklin's dad came over like a couple of generations before, but mum was a recent English implant in America, right?
His dad, Josiah, married a young wife and they had three kids. And they were secretly Protestants in Britain when you couldn't be Protestants. So they had to practice their religion in secret. So they moved in 1682 to America for religious freedom. And he dumped his wife and kids and married another woman.
That's religious freedom for you,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
To move to a different country and dump your wife and kids.
Yeah. You're right. And he remarried and had 10 more kids. We had 17 in total. And Benjamin was the youngest kid by two, the youngest son of the second marriage. And, yeah, his mum was the daughter of Peter Folger, who was one of the first settlers in New England and was a learned man.
Mm-hmm.
So he had some pretty bright parents. But both parents, because his mum was someone as well, because he's a bit of a feminist, actually.
Yeah, he is. Well, I was interested to read that because you don't imagine in 1700 that somebody might advocate for the education of women.
Yeah.
But he did.
He did. And he seemed to have a really happy marriage later on, and his wife was really a partner. And he had a good role model of a mother. So, yeah, that helps to be a good founding father, to have a good general respect for men and women.
He does have a real open sense of community. And again, for this era, you just imagine that everybody's really bigoted and stuff. And perhaps most people were. I don't know, because I don't have that knowledge. But he just seems surprisingly open-minded to me.
Yeah.
For a young white man in this time and space.
Yeah,
but
I agree. That's why he's on the notes.
That's why he's on the notes. So, 17 kids.
Yeah, bloody hell.
His dad had.
I know, and he still seems to quote his dad a lot. It seems like everyone got enough attention. Don't know how, but they seem to have.
I know, because he also had to spend half his time making candles.
Yeah, I know.
So the dad was a tallow chandler.
Yeah. It sounds wrong, doesn't it? It sounds like you should be a tallow chandler. A tallow chandler. Hang on, what was he?
He was a tallow chandler.
It sounds weird.
Which is a candle maker.
Yes.
And he made soap.
Well, he got a good education first. He actually got sent to a grammar school. Then he got church educated. And then he got sent to writing and arithmetic classes. And then came out at 10 years old to be apprenticed to his dad. But he didn't want to work with candles. He actually had an eye.
Who does?
Someone might go, this is for me.
Jo Malone.
That's right. Got her book. I need to read it. They're in Boston, right? So they were right on the ocean. So he really had an urge to go to sea. You would if you're a boy. You just want to go on adventures, not make candles. So his dad, to curb that, realised that he was very bookish. And he said, OK, after 2 years of working with candles, he said, OK, you've got a brain. You need to go and work with your older brother, who was a printer.
Because the dad had 17 kids, he couldn't obviously afford education for all of them. And Benjamin is the youngest son. And I think that he was the brightest of the bunch. And I think the other kids kind of went off and did manual things and apprenticeships. Whereas if any of them were going to be learned scholars, it was going to be Benjamin, which is why he was put into education. I think that probably has to do with having, like, what is he, the third youngest overall? 14 older brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And an intelligent mum and dad. You're going to be talking and reading much younger than an average kid, right?
True.
So he's got a good grounding. And yeah, they spot it and they send him off to school. But then he goes to work for his brother.
Yeah, what amazes me is, in a time of slavery, they enslaved themselves. They call it apprenticeships. But they're totally bound by these contracts. And I guess it happens in this day and age, but less and less now, but where people are contracted so tightly, they're basically bound like a servant almost. Because he was bound for, I think, 10 years. He could only leave when he was 21. He was apprenticed to the point where he actually had to run away at 17. He actually had to flee because I guess you could be put in prison if you break a contract like that.
And it was to his brother as well.
Yeah. And his brother clearly beat him. He says it, but doesn't say it. He says it really carefully. And you read between the lines, it's like his brother was clearly quite abusive towards him.
Yeah. I wonder if his brother was kind of jealous of him. Because obviously his brother was older, didn't get the education paid for, had to go straight into the trade. And now his upstart little brother's come to work for him.
And he's already better. He could write. He was addicted to reading in a day before TV or any other sort of entertainment. I mean, he was educated himself with books. And then he could write amazing articles for the newspaper and stuff.
But the thing is that his brother didn't let him write. He wanted to write, but his brother didn't let him write.
That's right.
So he started inventing pen names, right?
Yes.
And he would send stuff in, supposedly from other people. And then those pieces started getting published. Yeah. He would overhear his brother and his colleagues saying how much they enjoyed these pieces that were sent in. They published them in the paper. And then eventually Benjamin Franklin admitted it was him.
Yeah, it's not going to go down well.
It didn't go down well when he was uncovered as the writer. No. Because I think his brother is jealous of him.
Oh, I think you're right.
Yeah.
His brother went to prison for a bit. He'd published something controversial and it was a libel case and he had to go to prison for a bit.
For a month, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted to shut the paper down, but they figured out if they put it in Benjamin's name, it could continue. And I think there was a problem that when his brother came out of prison, he couldn't continue the paper, so they put it in Benjamin's name.
That's right. By the way, he says in that time, it was only the second newspaper in America. And at time of writing, which was 1771, there were 25 newspapers. He also says at some point later in this book, when he publishes his own newspapers, that he made a point to never put anything libelous in his paper or never put any negative stuff in his paper. And he said, although other papers nowadays, like years later, and he's saying years later in 1771, are a disgrace to our country. So they got bad, I guess, from two papers to 25.
Imagine what he would think of the press.
Imagine!
Now.
I know!
It's just
so they
hateful.
Descended that fast into being awful, awful news reporting that fast. Went straight to the gutter and stayed there.
Yes.
Of course, there are some very informative newspapers out there.
No, but what you could say is it sold and people
that's
bought
why.
It.
People
and
people like to read the bad stuff.
And that's what established the industry.
Yeah. And there's only the odd person that breaks through and says, I'm not going to write that crap.
Mm-hmm.
So his brother beat him and prevented him working in other printers because he said, all right, I'm going to leave. So he ran away at the age of 17, slipped onto a boat. He sold some books. So he didn't have much money. And he sailed to New York, which was 300 miles from home, and eventually got to Philadelphia completely broke.
I love this whole notion of getting on a boat, because I kind of imagine, oh, it's just like a modern boat with an engine, but it's so long ago, he's actually having to row some of the way.
Yes, that's right.
But how does that even
You've seen
work?
The Vikings, Kirk Douglas. You get those sailboats that also have oars for when it winds down.
So you're a paying passenger on this boat, which is, I guess, the 1700 version of getting on a ferry now, where you pay for a ticket, you get on and it takes you somewhere.
But
in
the wind
1700,
drops,
yeah, you have to all get on and row the boat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good, isn't it? Own your keep.
It's like them getting to scan your own shopping at the supermarket.
Self-service.
Self-service.
Yeah. And, well, to me, it's more weird that he gets on a boat because it's just down the road. It's on land. But, of course, because it's all coastal, it's a much easier way to travel. But they mustn't have had roads to connect these places.
And maybe all of these early settlements are built next to water, right?
Well, they
rivers
would be, wouldn't they?
Coast. So it's probably the quickest way is probably by boat.
But it's actually a point. They might not have been connected by roads. Oh, we're just making it up because we don't know.
We don't know. So where is he now?
All right, so he's got to Philadelphia. He's totally broke. It is really cool. Once you get through the Old English, it's actually amazing the way he describes these times and when he comes to this town. And it's Philadelphia. As we know it now, I've never been there, have you?
No.
I'd love to go there.
I've had the cheese.
Oh, yeah, good cheese. But it's a massive city now, obviously. And how he describes it, it's a port town. And he's just walking down a road, sees this woman in a house that years later becomes his wife.
Miss Reed.
Yeah. And he remembers her. And it just seems like a small village.
What I find amazing is that so he gets off the boat and he wanders into town. And it even sounds like there's not inns, like people will put you up in their house for a shilling or whatever the currency is. And then he'll go to the next house and the old lady's got some gingerbread. So you give her a penny and you'll get the gingerbread.
Yep.
It's very early days of a society.
It is. That's exactly
like,
right.
The
yeah.
high street isn't. So like we're just saying, there might not even be a road.
No. But you think a pub is a public house.
Yeah.
So it's somebody's house, used to be, where they've let the public in and sell them drinks. It's that. It's the origins, of hospitality. It's your house. We're just so making it up.
Well, I know.
To be honest, there's a lot of information in this book. There's also so much missing. You can't...
Oh, yeah. If we're getting it wrong, I totally blame Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, I do. But he's got absolutely nothing. But what he has is a connection... From when he was in New York, somebody said, my son has a printer. You should go to this town in Philadelphia and see if he'll employ you. And when he got there, the bloke said, I'm really sorry, I can't employ you, but there's one other printer. This bloke called Keimer. He went to him and he said, yeah, I can employ you. So that was his start, thank God.
But he also kind of looked down on these new printers, right? I think his brother's printers was much more state of the art, but it was more advanced. And so already he's working for this new printer. And he's like, this isn't as good as a printer I used to be.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I think he's already, 17 at this point?
Yeah, 17.
He's already. Like, I imagine a lot of 17-year-olds would just take that job and be happy to have that job. Yeah. Whereas young Benjamin Franklin's thinking, this isn't quite good enough. How can I change this?
How can
I expand printing to the larger world? It's all about, like you say, he was so into books. And he knows that printing is a vehicle to get knowledge out to the masses, which is already in his head. And so he goes to this printing place and he thinks, it's not as good as the one I was at. What can I do about it? He has an extraordinary brain for a young
man. He does, and he is ambitious. But I guess if you've run away from your family because they won't let you advance, you have to advance before you can hold your head high and go home.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what was it all for?
Mm-hmm.
So he really does need to prove himself. But he came to the attention of the governor of the province, because every now and then he'd publish his own thoughts on
little pamphlets. Yeah, I guess this is like the early
version of
blogging.
Yeah, it really is. And that's how he drew attention to so many things and advanced himself, by putting his thoughts out on paper because he had access to a printer.
So do you think if Benjamin Franklin was 17 now, he'd be one of those really annoying kids with a TikTok account?
Yes, he would.
He's Mr. Beast.
Yes. Yeah. So the governor of the province said, you've got promise, you should set up your own printers, and started to actually pay some attention. They started to come to the town, the governor and his pal, who really well-respected people, and call at him at the printers and take him out to lunch and stuff like that.
Yeah, because that poor man who run the printer, Keimer,
he thought
the governor was coming for him. He was so excited to see him turn up at the printers. Oh, the governor's here. So can we see young Benjamin, please?
Take out my apprentice.
So they really did home in on this young Benjamin, and they kind of wined and dined him and said, you should be creating your own print house.
Yeah.
And what do they do? They sent him a letter.
They did. They sponsored him by writing a letter to his dad saying, you should set him up in his own business. This is a very great bloke. But he was 18 when he went home for the first time after running away. So he's well dressed and he goes home and everything's great. And his brother was really jealous.
Oh, he says, my brother was still grum and sullen.
Grum. That is grumpy.
Look at that.
Wow.
Grumpy.
Full of grum.
Grum.
But his dad said, no, you're still too young.
But his dad did say that when he was 1 and 20, if he'd proved himself, he would help him. But he just considers him too young to invest in at this moment in time.
Yes. And he was right, because he'd been hanging in around with this mate, Collins, who was a bit of a drunkard. And he lent him loads of money he'll never see again. And he said at that point, he keeps saying he has errata.
It was the greatest errata of my life.
Yeah, yes. We should start saying that as well.
But he does say quite a few things of the greatest errata of his life.
Yeah, he's like got
when
a few.
He didn't get together with Miss Reed straight away.
But he corrected that errata.
Yeah, he did.
Yes. That's when he realised that he was too young to open a business, because he lent this fellow money and it was not a good investment.
Yeah.
So, it was right. But when he got back to Philadelphia, the governor said, this time I'll sponsor you and I'll send you to England. And when you're there, get all the stuff to bring back and make the printers here. And so he did that. He got everything together and he went to say goodbye to the governor. The governor wouldn't see him. So that was the first suspect thing that happened. He went on this massive journey overseas, 3 weeks or something.
Oh,
in
my
those
God,
days.
It takes forever.
Yeah. On which, by the way, he decided to eat fish because ages ago he decided he wasn't going to eat meat.
Now, when I read here that this young teenager in 1724 was vegetarian, I was like, was that even a thing that people did then?
That's what I thought. He didn't use the word vegetarian, obviously, but he just decided not to eat the flesh of animals. It's much better for you, he thought. That was his main reason. But he didn't think it was right to take life. That was one reason. And the other reason, he thought it was healthier. So he didn't eat meat. It's amazing.
I'm amazed by that. He's like centuries ahead of his time.
And he's a man and he's a lad.
Yeah.
You know, and he needs strength and he was strong. He was stronger than everyone else. He was healthy, actually, very healthy.
And he said that when he would be invited to dinner and stuff, it would actually cause a problem that he didn't eat meat. But he would be quite steadfast in his beliefs and people would have to accommodate him.
Yeah, right.
And he's a teenager.
It's amazing.
Point. I mean, we say it's amazing, like, but like I said, my grumble with him is that I think he's a bit arrogant and conceited. And this pays to that, to go to somebody's house for dinner before vegetarianism was even a word and say, I'm not eating the food you're giving me.
Do you know, really had the confidence to stand
Is it
by
confidence?
Him. Interestingly, I read this and thought it was written by an incredibly humble man. And you found him arrogant.
I think, you know, what I said earlier about him being extremely bright because he's like the 15th of 17 kids. So you don't just have an intelligent mum and dad. Actually, at the point when you're a kid, you have 10 brothers and sisters to engage with. And actually what that does, it makes you very confident at a young age.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening here. And I think you need that to push forward and become a founding father. You need it. I think that perhaps he is a bit arrogant.
Yeah, maybe. I was just so happy to hear all these things. And the other thing is, when he was being trained up for church work, he studied religion so much, he found all the holes in it and argued against it, not all of it. He's still got some spiritual beliefs, but he argued against religion for what they were teaching, certain aspects, and he actually became an atheist. He became an atheist vegetarian. It's incredible. And he really loved to argue his point with people. Just later when he decided to become a better person does actually prove your point, because one of the things was humility and actually trying to argue your point whilst listening to other people more. And he said after that conversations went much better because he wasn't trying to enforce his point on people. He was listening and he was much more gentle and kind, and he found that conversations flowed better. So halfway through his life, he maybe tried to curb his arrogance and confidence, possibly. Then you'll probably say it's quite arrogant to try and do that.
No, I would just say that it's essential to have those qualities to forge forward in the way that he has. So in a way, you can't have somebody like Benjamin Franklin without those qualities.
A huge amount of confidence,
and actually, like, he does realise and acknowledges that he needs more humility.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at point of writing, he's quite a kind, humble person.
Oh, look, I'm just trying to find fault with him, if you know what I mean.
Because he might be close to perfect.
Anyway, back to the fish.
Yes.
He says that he believes that taking fish to eat is an unprovoked murder.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have any fish. And then everyone else, obviously, you're on a ship. That's the food that's around you. They cook this fish and he smells it and it's gorgeous. Yeah. And then they open it up and he sees other little fish inside the fish. And he thinks, hang on, if you are eating other fish, then I could eat you as well, because that's part of the food chain. That's exactly where I got to when I started eating fish. That's exactly the thought process.
You don't eat fish now, do you?
Occasionally.
Well, then you're guilty of unprovoked murder. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Blocked and reported.
Yes.
Swimming along.
He arrived in London to find he'd been diddled.
Yeah.
Yeah. That governor was full of it.
He stiffed him.
He stiffed and diddled him.
But what was his motivation for doing
that? Well, he says the same. He questions it. And he says he thought that he really enjoyed seeming like he had authority and power, but he didn't have any. He had nothing to give, so he gave hope to people. That was his biggest thing he gave. that just made him feel good. Because when he got back to Philadelphia 18 months later, he passed that governor in the street and he was no longer governor. He was just an ordinary citizen. He said they just passed each other and they didn't say a word.
But that governor sent a young man on a major trip to London to say, get some printing equipment. I'll write you all the letters necessary for credit. It was bring it all back. And it was all a lie.
Yeah, a bit of a nut job. These people exist because it made him feel powerful to say it. But it was an absolute lie. These people exist. So anyway, he did have a brilliant time in Britain, it seems. Yes. 18 months of a year he found work in one printers, and then he moved to another bigger one in Lincoln Inn Fields, which is bang in the middle of the city of London nowadays.
Oh, he has, it's known, isn't it, the Benjamin Franklin House?
Apparently so, I've been told that since reading this book. So I really should go and investigate that.
Yeah.
Well, only yesterday I was on the Battersea Barge and right opposite was Chelsea. And I was going, wow, look at that. Benjamin Franklin jumped in the river there and swam right past here and swam round up the Thames all the way to Blackfriars. And I was standing there yesterday looking at the river, imagining Benjamin Franklin, the man off the notes, swimming past me up the river.
I'm shocked at this. I love that he swam that far.
Yeah, well, all I can think is, right, it would have been so much greener London then. There would have probably been fields. When it's Lincoln Inn Fields, there'd have probably still been fields. Oh. You know, it wouldn't have been built up like it is at all. And the river would have been cleaner.
But it's got a hell of a current to it.
Because he grew up by the sea. He was a swimmer, you know.
But that's still a hell of a swim.
It's a hell of a swim. And he said his colleagues were all amazed and he was showing off above water and under the water.
I couldn't swim from one side to the other. I couldn't swim the width of the Thames.
Well, I could if it wasn't really, really tidal, which it is, because it would be pulling you one way or the other.
Which makes this even more remarkable.
All I can say is the tide must have been going out.
It carried him along.
He was obviously a strong swimmer.
I mean, he's almost becoming a superhero at this point. Yeah. He's not just hugely intelligent and...
He's also athletic now, suddenly. This is my favourite thing in this whole book. The second printers he works at was a big one, and there were 50 workers there, and he calls them guzzlers of beer. Yes. And they call him the water American because he only drank water and they couldn't understand this. Why don't you drink beer? He said. He was carrying up these huge, heavy tablets, a few in each arm, whereas the workers there, they could only carry one in both arms. And they'd look at him and go, why is this water American so strong? But we drink strong beer. We should be stronger than him. And they actually thought that strong beer meant it gave you strength. And they actually thought it was because of all the grains in the beer. Mm-hmm. He said they wake up and drink a pint. Then they'd have breakfast with a pint. He lists this, then they have like a pint before lunch, a pint with lunch, a pint when they get home, a pint with dinner, and a pint before they go to sleep of strong beer, right? He says at the end of the month, they've got no money and they're weak. And he says, and thus these poor devils kept themselves always under. It's the story of poverty, really. Yeah. But he says he actually managed to persuade some of them to join him for breakfast at this inn that only cost a tiny bit of money, and it was porridge, I think, basically, something like that, or bread and cheese. It was something really basic. And he said, there's more grains in this one piece of bread than you're actually getting for all your 8 pints.
How did they ever get any printing
done?
They
must have been hammered.
I mean, we have a reputation around the world of being heavy drinkers, right?
I know.
And it was the same 300 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, no wonder he could rise up above these people. Yeah, right. And he isn't being taught this. He just knows. It's just partly common sense, especially saving your money, you know, because you can't get anywhere in life if you're broke.
Is he also, like, massive? Is he, like, 6'4" and built like a brick shit house?
I don't know.
Because if he's carrying all of those tablets and the other people are carrying one, if he's doing all this swimming, if people are really looking up to him, I just get the impression that he's a real strong, powerful man.
I agree, because I have to say that this famous picture of him, he looks so ill and unhealthy. Right. You can't imagine him only drinking water and eating well. He's probably 80 in this picture.
Yeah.
I don't know. He just doesn't look like a healthy vegetarian water drinking
No, he's
athlete.
Older there. When he was 18, he could have been a real...
But that's the thing. It's trying to picture him as this lad, a real hilarious, educated. That's why people liked his company. He was really good at conversations. He had all this knowledge. He was funny. He's athletic. Like, you have to picture this young man.
Presumably, he's becoming someone. There must be portraits of a young Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, you're right. And you only get this unhealthy-looking fellow.
Well, an older guy with a middle-aged spread, that's all.
Yeah, he says, I was a jocular verbal satirist. So they put him on dispatch at the paper. So he actually did start writing stuff and getting printed up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then he took up with this bloke called Mr. Denham, who was in Britain, who bought loads of printer stuff and said, let's go back to Philadelphia and set up a paper there, or a printer's.
But didn't he get ill? They both got ill.
Yeah, he actually went back to Philadelphia. They actually set up this printer's, and he said he was like a father figure, and they really got on, and they lodged together. But yeah, they both got the pox. He was near death. They were both near death, and then Mr. Denham died. And so he had to start again, basically. So he went to work for Keimer again, but they fell out, and he was so fed up, he went, that's it, I'm leaving. Keimer was like, please come back. He sent one of his workers to talk to him to get him to come back. This worker actually said, my dad can set us both up as a printer. We could do better than this. This bloke, Meredith.
Meredith.
And so they did. His dad put the money in, and they set up a new printer's in town.
Is this where they start printing money?
I know, I was thinking, isn't that a phrase when you say you're practically printing money, and he's actually printing money?
Yeah. He made a lot of money by printing money.
He did.
No, but I mean, but how do you get money, unless you're counterfeiting money, which I get.
No, I think you must just get paid a lot of, must just be a well-paid job. Yeah. But there was so little money, oh my God, talk about early days. I can't remember what it is, but he said something like there was 15,000, and it was pounds.
Yes.
Knocking around this whole region, and there was an argument to print more, but it was a political issue. And I remember, because I did economics when I was at school, but don't ask me now, but it was to do with if you actually circulate more actual money, it can devalue it. That sounds really simple now I say it. It's really obvious, isn't it? So there's a lot of people saying you shouldn't print more money. The richer people were saying we don't want it devalued. There was an argument for printing more money. And so he sneakily printed a pamphlet arguing pro-printing more money, which really helped the side of the politics that wanted it. So it got it passed, and as a reward, he got the job of printing it.
Printing the money.
He's very clever how he put propaganda out and got himself up the ladder each time he did it, because he had the power of the media. If you're printing information, you've got power.
But he's still so young. How does he learn all this at such a young age?
He read books. Oh, my God, I love how much he reads. Even when he was at home, there was no libraries or anything. He'd find people with books and borrow them. And he says, I can't remember what deal I struck, but when he's in London, the next door shop had a lot of books, and he did a deal with them where he could read their books. He'd
books
stay
are
up
expensive.
All night reading. Yeah. Everywhere he went, he read and read and read. He just gathered information. It was just like us now, but we know a lot about really random, unuseful things.
We are just like Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah.
I think we'll be on a £10 note.
Yeah. Ask me Dolly Parton's middle name, I can tell you. Ask me who founded America, I'm still confused.
So whilst all this is happening, what he has been doing is that he assembles like-minded young men and starts their social group.
Yeah.
Called the Junto.
Yes.
And the whole point of that is discussion and furthering knowledge and sharing knowledge. And they come together, I don't know, once a week.
Yeah, and it's debating. They have to put forward issues to debate every week. And it actually is, over the years, I think they become quite powerful because they actually can debate issues that might actually filter into policies.
Yeah, they do. They debate stuff like morals and politics and natural philosophy, which natural philosophy has evolved into science.
Oh, right, that's
what
it is.
That was the first thing they called the field of science was natural philosophy.
Right.
Which doesn't seem scientific at all.
It's thinking about nature.
But what about, oh, they didn't even have technology then, did they?
No.
So science was literally nature.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's science.
Yeah. But yeah, they were called Junto, but they were also known as the Leather Apron Club. I googled it.
What?
He never says that.
Yeah, what is a leather apron?
I don't.
Do you think because they all make candles?
But the thing is, they weren't all upper-class people. They were all
tradesmen.
Yeah, they were all a variety of tradespeople or farmers or anybody, a real selection, that were just intellectuals.
But they all facilitated a leather apron.
Yeah, it's funny that, but yeah, apparently.
Or maybe it was a fetish thing.
Yes.
You know, like the Masons, likely. Perhaps they had a secret handshake.
Oh.
That they only wore a leather apron.
Maybe they only wore them. Yes, you're right.
And that's why he doesn't mention it.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
He's embarrassed now.
Yes. So anyway, he decided to start a newspaper on his own. And he accidentally told somebody who works for Keimer. So Keimer then planned to open his own newspaper and announced it and got in there before him when he was really annoyed. To scupper him, he wrote very entertaining articles for a rival newspaper that already existed, which really boosted the readership of that newspaper. So Keimer's secondary newspaper fizzled. And after 9 months of that, he said, look, do you want to buy up my newspaper? It's not working for me. He only had 90 subscribers. So Benjamin Franklin bought it and it thrived under him because then he starts writing his own entertaining articles and it boomed. Okay, yeah, I could see there's that side of him that's a little bit ruthless because he does push himself onwards and upwards quite strongly.
And also, it's not just the content of his newspapers. Like, he's writing a lot of it and it is entertaining, but he's also thinking about the presentation. It looks better. The typeset is better. Yeah. I guess it just looks more modern than Keimer, who's been there for ages doing it. There's just a real sense of moving forward with young Benjamin Franklin that you're not getting with the older newspapers.
That's true. He's just one step ahead of them, isn't he? Anyway, he turns it very profitable. Then he starts printing money. Then he prints laws and votes of government. He opens a stationer's shop on the side.
Yeah.
And then he marries
Miss Reed.
Miss Reed. He says, oh, there was no dowry for her because she got married to someone else whilst he was in England and only sent her one letter.
Yes.
Errata.
Errata.
So she married someone else who was a potter who ended up buggering off. So she was still available. But there was no dowry, so he didn't get paid to marry her, unfortunately. You know what I mean? Isn't that crazy? But luckily, she was very useful. So as soon as they were married, she became his assistant in the stationery shop and they got along very nicely. She was very valuable to him and they had a very happy marriage.
And children.
They had children. He really brushes over. He doesn't mention it, basically.
He talks about when one of them dies.
He talks about one of them who died and one of them he takes on as an apprentice who really obviously became his right-hand man, actually.
Yeah, so the one who doesn't die is kind of almost being trained up to be the next Benjamin Franklin.
Because like he was clerk of the Assembly at some point. Then when he gets elevated to a main member of the Assembly, his son takes over in his clerk position. So his son's being trained up to be him. But we don't know about the other kids. He had four kids, I think. He didn't really mention him. I'm fine with that.
He's a busy dad.
He's very busy.
All of these books we read, they don't really care about their children, let's face it. Why should Benjamin Franklin be different?
Yeah. He proposed the first public library.
Oh, I love this.
It's brilliant.
Now, does this come from the Junto Club?
Probably.
Because we're attributing like literally everything to Benjamin Franklin, but he does have this club now and they are all debating and bouncing ideas off each other and all bringing their own books to share amongst each other. And I suppose then they just have this idea, oh, actually, we could share these books.
Yeah.
Why to get a scheme going? And then, oh, what we haven't mentioned actually is this is all happening during the Age of Enlightenment. The way that that would happen, you move society forward, is to educate everyone. And at this point, knowledge is in books.
Yeah.
But books are expensive. Benjamin Franklin is of the opinion, if we're going to move forward as a society, everybody has to have the knowledge. We can't just have a couple of people at the top.
Yeah, or everyone who wants them should have access to them.
And so that's the Age of Enlightenment. We are enlightening the masses so we can move forward. And of course, they want to be separated from the bloody England.
Yes.
Who's ruling over them.
Yeah.
You know, all the colonies are now getting together and saying, we don't want King George over us anymore.
Yeah.
But in order for that to happen, like, everybody needs to be on the same page.
Hey!
So that's where they get the idea of the subscription.
Yeah, and he describes how he gets the money together and all that stuff and the building. Yeah, and it's the first library in America.
Incredible.
Yeah, and then he makes the first hospital.
Yes.
Or he helps, actually, that wasn't him. It was somebody else, but he really helps get the funding and get it passing through all the channels it needs to by publishing pamphlets supporting the need for a hospital because he has that power. And then he starts the first fire service.
I know.
I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, he's like, there's a real problem with all these houses burning. What can I do? I know. I'll put this forward. Again, he's like debating in the Junto and then they get the idea more solid and then they can put it forward. Everyone goes, yeah, that's brilliant. We'll get this gang together where everyone's got buckets, blankets. It's just organising the community. And he says, when I moved on from that, it evolved and became a proper fire service. They got money enough for fire engines and ladders and everything. and it really helped take down the deaths and all the...
Extraordinary that you read that, oh, so he's just invented the library. Now he's invented the fire service.
Oh, then he says, we should have more education. He gets a building, he gets trustees, and he makes sure, I love this, he makes sure there's, of the trustees, there's one person from every denomination so that no one denomination can ever take over. So this won't be a Christian learning thing or a Catholic. And when one person leaves, he has to find somebody from either that denomination or none. He's from none. Mm-hmm. So he has to take over as a trustee. Then they have to have a bigger building. And that actually becomes the University of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So he founded that as well. Oh, yeah, and on the fire thing, of course, he invented the covered stove, which really helped a lot less fires happen.
Extraordinary. He designed it. That he's doing all of this and he's creating universities and libraries and stuff. And I think in the middle of one of the wars, when he's
designed a stove.
When he's organising militia, he's like, oh, well, yeah, I've got a good idea for a stove.
Yeah.
But he didn't patent it. People said to him, you need to protect your idea. And he said, well, no, it's for everyone. Yeah. I just want people to have it.
He just wanted less fires to happen.
And a bloke in England patented it and became very, very rich.
Very rich. And he said, I don't even care, didn't even want to argue it. If that's a good opportunity for him. But it did, of course, come back to him anyway, everyone knows. And it's called the Franklin Stove to this day. And it got modified and made better, but he's the original idea of covering fire so it doesn't set fire to your bloody house all the time. And this, this is brilliant. Firstly, he transformed the streets of Philadelphia.
Hang on, he invented the pavement.
Like that.
The sidewalk.
No, the pavements were already there. It was the gap between the pavements was still mud. Because he said that he basically got it bricked over between the pavements either side.
Okay.
So they'd paved the very bits you walk along by the shops, but the middle bit where you drove your carriages along was still mud.
Kicking up dust.
Yeah, he said in the summers it was so dusty, everyone got covered in dust. In the rainy seasons or winter, people were squelching in mud, and so they were going into the shops covered in mud. Yeah. It's such a funny concept again. But sadly, the consequence of all of this is that we've paved over our entire world and we forget that there's even mud under all the concrete because you just got a little designated park now. So it's gone a bit far.
And also streetlights. He revolutionised the streetlights. Streetlights
is brilliant. Yeah, because everything was coming from Britain. So he said the first time they had lamps, they couldn't even persuade everyone to want lamps. So this private citizen put one lamp outside his house and then everyone wanted them. So then they got them over from London and they were globes.
Globes.
So that if you broke it, you had to replace the whole thing. I can't believe this. It's so obvious actually now. But he then invented the four-paned square lamp. And the other thing was they didn't have air vents. Basically, they lit them and within a couple of hours, the light was just practically dark because you couldn't see through
it
the blackened lamp.
Globe.
So every morning they have to clean them. So he invented, so obvious, a vent so that the air could go through it so the smoke would come out. So it stayed light all night. I mean, seriously, I'm embarrassed for London. I'm really embarrassed. They might have looked nice. But come on, people.
Yeah.
You're telling me there were lights, but you couldn't see through them because they were smoked out. Idiots. Then, of course, his lamp must have got back to London because we had the square lamps.
Yeah.
Wow. But, yeah, these things are brilliant. He just turned his mind to so many things just to improve stuff.
He was a polymathic genius. The way that he could just think of everything, he's not contained. Most people are contained into one field and they're experts in one field.
Yeah.
Benjamin Franklin is such a precocious young man.
Yeah.
He literally can transform anything.
Yeah. Also, just realising that you can make a difference. You don't just walk around going, oh, fill up with mud on my shoes when I go shopping.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. But then you, one person wouldn't think, oh, I can transform the infrastructure of the country and pave the road.
You wouldn't think that.
You would think, I'll take my shoes off.
Yeah.
Whereas he thought, oh, I can change the
And then he could get support by printing leaflets with a very persuasive argument for the things he wanted. And then everyone supported it.
It is interesting. It really is. Like, you know, like we talk now about self-publishing and content creating.
Yeah.
That everybody does. And it's kind of almost looked down upon. But actually, he was doing that.
Yeah, he was.
He was his own, and not his own cheerleader, but he took it upon himself to get his ideas out there, which resulted in real change.
Real change for the better, because he was a good fellow.
That exists today.
Yeah. The first thing you have to have is you have to harness the power of the media. And he had it by almost coincidence, because that's not why he set out to be a printer, is it? And once he had it, he could use it to change things.
He just harnessed the power of the printing press.
Yeah, he did.
It is extraordinary.
I've got to mention this. In 1732, he published Poor Richard's Almanac.
Oh, yeah,
you
I love
need
it.
A copy of that. I need to get one for you as a present. You can't have Poor Richard's Almanac. It's just a calendar with important dates. And when there were no important dates, he just put catchphrases and memes, basically. That sort of thing. Like, for example, it is hard for an empty sack to stand upright.
Yeah.
It's true.
Which means you should educate yourself.
Either that or definitely have a good meal. Either way.
We haven't talked about his 13 ways for better living or whatever.
Oh, that is brilliant. Yeah, he dedicates quite a few pages to describing how he tried to better himself.
And there's 13, we won't say them because 13 is too many, but it's like an early self-help manual,
it is. He said, around this time, I set about a project to achieve moral perfection. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a good thing to strive for.
Yeah, and he really worked on it. Oh, my God, he's got this actual chart where he numbers every single hour of the day and what he's going to do. It must have been a little bit of a pain in the arse to live with.
Oh, yes. No, he'd have a cleaning rotor up in the fridge, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
You know, this concept of organising your life and writing lists and bullet point journalism.
Yeah.
Is massive right
now.
Yeah,
I know.
Like, you go onto Etsy and you can buy 100,000 different types of diary full of to-do lists to get you through the day. Benjamin Franklin seemingly also invented that.
Yeah. This is 300 years ago.
Do you know what? Before we started this project where we're reading an autobiography every day, every week, I'm kind of feels like every day.
Yeah.
I actually used to read a lot of those self-improvement books.
Did you?
Yeah, loads of them. And it's interesting how the 13 virtues that he lists here are basically the basis of those
The modern
books.
Self-help book, yeah. They're really good. I went through them all and I get it. They're really good.
And the way that he did it, so there's 13, but he would work on like one a week before he would move on to the next one.
Yes.
It's like you can't change overnight. It's the habit thing. The last book I read was The Power of Habit.
Right.
And actually, it did transform my life. You know, I lost all that weight recently.
Yeah.
And it's not about thinking about the long term. It's doing the same thing every day. And actually, within a week, it becomes a habit.
Yeah.
And then you can move on to the next form of self-improvement.
Yes.
And that's, he's totally has that mindset and that way of thinking.
That's right. And he said there's no point trying to do all these things on the surface. Until it's a habit, you haven't changed anything. Until it's a natural habit. These are just some of the things, though. The aims are to have no faults at any time. It's to eat not to dullness and drink not to elevation. It's not like banning food or drink. You're just not to take anything to excess.
Everything in moderation.
Yeah, that everything in moderation. Avoid trifling conversation.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
That's us out.
We'll never speak again. Always be doing something useful. Never, ever wasting time. Be sincere. Resolve to do stuff. Waste nothing. Everything in moderation. Yeah, cleanliness. And then the last one is to imitate Jesus and Socrates.
Do you not do that?
And humility. Yeah, it's all the good stuff. I think people like you and I, we actually do try to do something that's useful all the time. We try not to waste time because there's so much to do.
Yeah.
So that's why we're kind of on his wavelength, aren't we?
Yes. I mean, this whole thing is completely idealistic, but he kind of knows that this is like the thing to strive for. And I think this is 100%. But if you get to 75%, even if you got to 50%, it's 50% better than what were at the beginning. But like I said, I read a lot of those self-improvement books anyway, because I have to keep reminding myself that I need to improve. And all of these things that he talked about really fall into it. And I find them all very useful.
I do too. Yeah, I think he's on it. 300 years ago proves we don't basically learn anything. We don't change.
Yeah, I know. It's depressing, isn't it?
Anyway, there's a lot more in this book. There's a lot of stuff that happens with the war and Britain being totally crap, sending over troops. Like, he suggested that all the colonies should get together for defence because Spain and France were warring with Britain around this time, which therefore was a massive threat to America as well. He was proposing that we all get one unit of defence together, and Britain said no. and they sent a load of troops over. It's just farcical. They were just shit. He said the troops went through villages and ruined some people's lives and were abusive.
That's awful.
Really, really bad. It's really embarrassing. And I apologise again for Britain.
Yeah, we should rename Britain Sorry.
Sorry,
I'm sorry to everyone for how terrible we were.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we've run out of time.
There's loads
long
of stuff about that. He's building forts. He's gets into all sorts.
He's organising the militia for the war.
Yeah. There's tons of American history in this book. There's tons missing, and we realise how much we don't know from reading this book.
So I feel quite good. If we're talking about self-improvement, I feel quite good that I've got through an hour of talking about Benjamin Franklin.
Yes.
If we were to do a book like this again, I would need more time.
Yeah, true. And there's such gaping holes in our knowledge. If anyone knows of any autobiographies that can help us fill in these gaps, let us know.
Oh, like we say, a lot of these books are an education, but by God, this one really was. And I've learned a lot about American history. We're just not taught it in schools over here.
No, but I need to know more.
I need to know more.
When does Les Mis happen?
That was in France.
When does Gone with the Wind? Gone with the Wind. When does Gone with the Wind happen?
That's after the revolution, isn't it?
Yeah. All right. We need to know more. That's what I know.
We need to know
and
more.
And we're really sorry.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. You could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography. So make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue, so make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much.